everyone. Welcome back to Story Nerds. I'm Hannah Davis.
And I'm Jessica Cade. And today we are here with our special guest, Lindsay Harrell. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here.
And we are excited to talk to Lindsay today because not only are we talking about her new book, The Joy of Falling, which has a lot of it set in New Zealand, neighbor to Australia. I get excited about anything on my side of the globe. but our topic, thanks to the content in Lindsay's book, is about forbidden love, which is such a great topic. I'm so excited about it.
Me too.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. So, Lindsay, why don't you kick us off first with our Nerd Off section of the podcast. Tell us, what's one of your favorite stories that features forbidden love?
Okay, well, when I think of forbidden love, one of the first things, well, okay, first of all, I came up with a long list, as probably you guys did too. But when I think of forbidden love, you know, you obviously think about two people who aren't supposed to fall in love, right? So automatically there are so many stakes, things stacked against them. And one of my favorites is While You Were Sleeping, Jack and Lucy. I mean, yes, I've been watching that movie. It was one of my mom's favorite movies. So we've been watching it since I was a teenager, and just, they're just perfect for each other. But of course he thinks that she's engaged to his brother who is in a coma, so she's obviously not supposed to fall in love with the brother, even though she's not actually in love with the with the one in the coma. So it's
awesome. True. If you've listened to this podcast at all before, you've probably already heard me talk about While You're Sleeping. So when before we began recording, Lindsay was kind of talking about which one she was going to choose, and I'm like, well, I could say a bunch, and then she said that one. I'm like, I knew that I shouldn't talk about that one because I've already talked about it many times before, but I'm so glad you brought it up because then we get to talk about it.
Yes, always. I love that movie so much. It just has so many, well, first of all, so many quotes, right? Quotable lines, which is amazing, but
these mashed potatoes are so creamy.
I knew that would be the first one you'd say.
Hey, this guy bothering you? He looked like he was a clean.
Clean it.
Best ever.
No.
Oh, man. Yeah, but just the chemistry between them is just so, I don't know. It's so cool. When the forbidden love trope is used, it's just, I personally love it because, you know they're not supposed to, like, they're breaking the rules. So there's something kind of, I don't know. I don't want to say. There's just something attractive about it. I don't know.
There's a chemistry element in there that definitely adds to the tension of the relationship.
Yes, but for sure.
Yes, and for sure that's the case with Lucy and Jack, which is just,
I know, because they're so alike and, like, they get along so well and they make each other laugh. And so automatically they're just, I don't know, just hitting it off, but they're not supposed to be hitting it off in that way. They're trying to pretend like they feel, you know, for each other, like brother, sister, because they're future brother and sister, even though they're not really. Mm-hmm. She knows they're not really, but he doesn't. So he feels really guilty, obviously, that he's, like, falling for his brother's fiance. And she's like, oh, man, I should have never lied.
I need to ask you this question because I think we've discussed this on the podcast before, but there has been a huge debate in my world. I remember in college, and I feel like I ask this question every time While You Were Sleeping gets brought up. The moment where he gifts Lucy the snow globe and she's wearing the white dress, like, on the hanger over her body. And he leaves kind of knowing, like, oh, man, this is too much and I have to go. And so he kind of rushes out the door and she steps out after him and she asks him, Jack, can you give me any reason why I shouldn't marry your brother? And he says, no. And it's just like, why didn't you say anything? And the other side of the debate, and I remember this happened in college, a bunch of guys and girls, we were all watching it together, and the guys were like, you just don't say that. So no, he has to say no. And all the girls were like, are you kidding us? So yeah, I have to ask you, Lindsay, what would you have done? Like, what's the right answer?
It's so hard because I think he was trying really hard to be honorable, right? So he doesn't want to steal his brother's fiance. So I can totally admire him wanting to be honorable, but I also The romantic in me is like, grab her and kiss her, please. Oh yeah, it's hard. It's hard because I don't know if you would respect him as much if he had done that, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know how he knows. He's always been frustrated with his brother sort of being a douchebag mm-hmm. and still getting so rich and getting everything he wants and always coming out on top. And yet he still feels this loyalty to a brother who has shown no loyalty to him at all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm like, oh man, he's a really good dude. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he never says anything until Lucy confesses that she's in love with him. And then he's like, oh, my goodness, I can say something.
Right. The whole, I'm in love with your son. I know. Not that one. That one. What did you do? Best line ever. I could probably quote the whole movie, but.
It is. It's such a great movie. It is the classic. Okay, not classic because it's not 1950s or 40s, but like,
all right.
It's a classic rom-com. It's just like mm-hmm. the most cute, funny, adorable romance, and mm-hmm. it's so hard to pass that up. But there is this, I love the tension between them mm-hmm. that happens because he is trying to be honorable. This is his mm-hmm. brother's girl, and mm-hmm. and that's not allowed, and yet here he is falling in love with her. And I love the fact that they challenge each other too, you know. She yells at him and he yells back, and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The forbidden aspect certainly builds the anticipation. It was interesting for me compiling my list of things I wanted to talk about, because I discovered that there are definitely some forbidden love storylines that I really, really like, but there are a lot mm-hmm. that I hate, because half the time I side with, you know, like Dirty Dancing. I'm on the parent side for that one, guys. I hate Patrick Swayze.
You know, it's so funny. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But
for me, the forbidden aspect of it is like, if I really
right
don't love it when there's it when they're in a relationship before and they're mm-hmm. they're like having to be like, well, I like this other person, but I'm in another relationship. And the reason why You Were Sleeping works so well is because we know she's not actually really in a relationship,
right?
Mm-hmm. And in fact, never intentionally like lied either.
Yeah, and it's all very, you know, and Jax being an honorable man, and mm-hmm. it works on so many different levels for that, mm-hmm. and I think that that's kind of the core for me of why that forbidden love actually
the
works
honorable
well.
Forbidden love. That's my favorite.
Yeah, I think when you think forbidden love, a lot of times it's like risque, or you know, like the like that terminology can feel like, oh, like, you know, there's definitely some relationships that are inappropriate and that sort of thing, but like you said, it works in this case because it's forbidden, but it's for like, because it's like this manufactured situation that's, you know, working. So,
mm-hmm. Great choice, Lindsay.
Thank you. I feel like you can't go wrong with While You Were Sleeping.
It's so true.
So Hannah, right, Jess, your next one. Oh, my turn. It's been so long since we did a podcast together. I just feel like this is like our first episode in 3 months or something that we've both been on here. So
I feel
it's
honored.
Been a long while. Yeah, you should feel honored, Lindsay.
I just,
it has been. We've both kind of had conflicting schedules, and for me, it's been work lately, just as a journalist trying to cover all that's happening in the world right now, so, and especially just the area that I cover, so it's a lot, but I'm glad that we're able to spend some time together. And having said that, Jess, let's go back to you.
Okay, I sat here last night racking my brains for which ones, and I was googling, there's those Miss Mojo videos about, you know, different topics like this forbidden love, so I was watching some of them to try and remember, and I made this list and I'm like, oh yeah, there's some good ones. But there was none that was like, I felt like there was one sitting in the back of my mind that was the big ding, ding, ding winner, and I hadn't thought of it. And then I finally was like, oh, how did I not think of this? Snow and Charming from Once Upon a Time. Ah! Love this one. I love that show. I should say, I haven't seen it all the way to the end. I watched the first 4 seasons, but I love that show and their storyline, which is predominantly like especially the season 1 storyline about them. There's forbidden love relationships all throughout that show, actually, but Snow and Charming on multiple levels. So if you're not very familiar with the premise of Once Upon a Time, all the fairy tale characters are real. However, their stories all have a twist in them that is not the traditional way you've heard about these fairy tales. And a curse has been unleashed. They all lived in the Enchanted Forest in their magical land, but a curse has been unleashed that sent them to our world, the land without magic. And they live in this town called Storybrook, and they don't remember who they are, and time does not pass in Storybook. It's always the same. They all have amnesia and don't really understand that they have no histories. They don't remember the Enchanted Forest. And then one day a woman arrives in Storybrook and time starts to move forward, and there's a whole doodad around that. So basically the important part is that the show is split into two sections. The first section is the current drama of what is happening in Storybrook with fairy tale characters in our modern world. But the other part is every episode features flashbacks to their lives in the Enchanted Forest. And there's usually a different fairy tale character each episode. You see what their backstory is, but it's always a twist on the traditional fairy tale we've heard. And the one that runs throughout the whole series is Snow White and Prince Charming. And their story is fantastic. And it is a forbidden love on multiple levels, because when they meet originally in the Enchanted Forest, Snow is a outlaw. And she's ambushing Prince Charming. He is engaged to a princess, and she holds up their carriage and steals the engagement ring. And he hunts her down to try and get it back. And they have this huge love-hate beginning to their relationship. And the other thing I love about them is that they have this thing. He always says, "I'll always find you." And the first time he's yelling it out is a threat, because she's running away with his stuff. And she's like, "Ha ha, see ya, sucker." And he's like, "I'll always find you." But it becomes their catchphrase, because they have such a life of tragedy with so many bad things happening to them. But he always finds her. And so throughout it, so their love is forbidden in that she's an outlaw, he's a prince, he's engaged when they first meet, and a whole lot of drama happens in their backstory. But then in the present world, in Storybrook, when the story starts out, at first he's actually in a coma, but once he wakes up, the evil queen, who is in the modern world the mayor of the town, Regina, she is doing everything she can to make Snow and Charming miserable. She hates them, and it's her life's goal to destroy them. And she has played on Charming's amnesia and made him think that the woman who is the one he was engaged to when he first met Snow, she makes them think that he's married to her in the present timeline. So he finally wakes up, he sees Snow, who's been reading to him in the hospital, has been unconscious this whole time. They have this instant chemistry, because they've actually like been married and stuff, but they don't remember it. And he's told that he's married to this other woman. And so there's just all these layers of forbidden, and the end of season one. I mean, this show's been out for a long time now, so spoiler alert, but I don't think I'm really breaking any state secrets here. At the end of season one, when the curse is lifted and they look at each other and realize who they are for the first time, one of the most beautiful moments in TV history.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say, I only watched the first season, but I absolutely loved the first season, and especially to watch at least Snow and Charming's.
I've watched all of them. Even the kind of awful very last season that didn't even have, that was mostly like Henry's story. Like,
I watched
all of it. I know. I couldn't get enough of it, but that season was pretty bad.
Oh, it was so good. And then there's so many other relationships like that too. Like, there's the far more disturbing Rumpelstiltskin and Belle, who, and that's the real Beauty and the Beast one.
I sort of remember that characters coming in.
Yeah. And then
that was a weird one.
Even Hook and Emma, I mean, Emma, that's another case we were talking earlier. No, it wasn't in this, it was in the last episode that I just filmed. So we batch our episodes, guys, if you don't realize we film multiple episodes on the same day. I've just hung up from talking with Kimberly Duffy, and we were talking about another TV show, Arrow, where the character of Felicity was never planned to be a major character, certainly not a love interest, but people loved her so much, she became this the central love interest of the show. The same thing happened with Hook in Once Upon a Time. So Henry, the little boy who brings Emma back into town, she's the woman who saved Storybrook. There's a whole story about Henry's father, and they reconnect, and there's certainly some spark there, and you think that this is going to be a love story to them, and then halfway through season two we meet Captain Hook, and hot damn, people, he is the best part of that show.
Amen, amen.
Him and Emma are amazing, and they pivoted. Again, he was an actor hired to be in like 3 episodes of that show, and the audience loved him so much that they turfed out Neil, and they made Hook Emma's main love interest, and they were fantastic.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, I love it when that happens. People just have such great characters and chemistry that they will change what their plans were, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel about like when forbidden love is like when there's somebody who's engaged or something and it's like then they start to fall in love with someone else and you know they're not really supposed to be with the person they're engaged to, like, so that's kind of like what happened, right, with Charming and Snow, but like we know like they're really supposed to be together, so is it different than like in like maybe Sweet Home Alabama or something like that where, you know, she's like engaged to somebody else,
she's
coming
engaged
back
to somebody else, and she has that. See, and I split. I think it depends on the characters in the story. To me, where it ultimately, that's sort of that really gray area where in real life, that doesn't happen, or it doesn't happen well for the most part. It can
shouldn't happen, probably, right?
It can, obviously, but it's like, I have a hard time with that one if it's not done well. I think you got to give the characters a good enough reason for it.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
But I do love Sweet Home Alabama so much.
I know.
It's true. I know.
We've talked about how we love Sweet Home Alabama too, because it's like both of those guys that could be very great for her. It just happens to be that her, you know, high school sweetheart was the one she was supposed to be with. So.
Right. Yeah. Just curious.
I know. Patrick Dempsey's also just a great, great human in that.
So tell us yours, Hannah. Who's on your list?
Okay, I mean, I have, like all of us, we have so many. I have the list that's just so overwhelming right now. But I have to go with the one that I was originally going to say. This is, for most of you, well, we've talked about this before, so I'll be fine. Lord of the Rings, Aragorn and Arwen.
I just watched the marathon.
Oh yeah.
I'm going a little bit off the beaten path with that because technically their romance itself wasn't the forbidden love part. As a matter of fact, especially in the books, you see it more in the books than you do the movie. Elrond is very much so a father figure to Aragorn. Aragorn, by FYI, Aragorn was 20 when he met Arwen. Arwen was 2,700 years old. Fun fact. This is what happens when you're an elf and you meet a human.
That's kind of like Hook and Emma. I think Hook was actually 400.
It's weird.
Stuck in Neverland for years.
There's a little bit of an age gap, you know, just like, what, 2,680 years in between that. No big deal. So in the books, it shows a little bit more than the movie, but Aragorn was very close with Elrond, and in fact, when he first met Arwen, their relationship was actually very, like, Elrond was quite supportive of it, but Elrond, knowing Aragorn wasn't living up to, quote, his potential, is as in, like, he needed to become king and claim the rights to the throne, which he had obviously, in fear, stepped away from. He kind of put the screws to Aragorn and said, if you're going to have my daughter, you're going to need to do that. You're going to need to step up, and hence the fact that he gave the Shards of Narsil to Aragorn. And so it really wasn't until the war broke out, and obviously Aragorn's having to make those calls, and then it comes to the fact of Arwen's safety becomes an issue. And it's been a long time since I've read the book, so I might not remember this correctly, but I do believe that Elrond sent Arwen away in the books as well, but for sure in the movie, for her protection, so that she could continue to live more than 2,700 years old, because apparently that's not enough for an elf, not when you're immortal. But
and I think, too, he wanted to save his daughter some heartbreak, right? Like, he's going to die before you do, and you're going to...
Yeah, which is really interesting, because she ended up only living another year after he died, so it was kind of a, like, well, that's just how it goes. But regardless, though, there relationship still has this tension of like, we cannot, especially when you get to that part where Aragorn has to make that call saying, I'm headed to war and this is, and he kind of tells her no. And it is sort of in a way of forbidden love. And I love the moment in the movie where Arwen runs back home and she leaves the group headed to traveling out to the west. I believe it's the Grey Havens. I might not be remembering that correctly either,
yeah,
but she
comes
back because she's so in love with Aragorn and she sees a glimpse of a vision that there is a future and there is a son in her future and it's with Aragorn and it's just like a forbidden love moment of like, my dad sent me away, but I have to ignore his wisdom and turn around to go back and fight for the man that I love. And it just is like, I remember thinking that's a classic moment of, it's not this like tension moment where you get the stories with like while you were sleeping or that sort of, but it is sort of that forbidden element. And I think that moment in time, that moment in the movie and the books, just that did it for me.
Well, I think it was easier, like earlier she says, I choose a mortal life, but
I choose, exactly.
And she's saying that, but it's before all of the strife and like the trials have come. So it's like at that moment when she's traveling away and she, yeah, I don't know, at that point she's choosing a mortal life, but she's like really choosing it, you know, like before it's like she can say it, but then it's like,
that's such a good
action.
Point. That's like where the rubber hits the road. Yeah. That's her moment where she's like, I choose him. And the moment at the end of the movie where they show Aragorn being crowned and she steps forward from her little flag, which in the books there's actually like a black cloth that's way more symbolic to her, but that'll get me every time. So I know that I'm kind of going a little bit off the beaten path with the forbidden love thing, but I feel like that moment right there was just like, she's choosing him, and it was like it was, you know, quote, forbidden by Elrond.
I like that one. That's good.
That's
my cool. My other choice was going to say CJ and Danny Kincannon in the West Wing.
Oh, so. Yes!
Confession, I have never seen it. I know. I've been told by so many people. Melissa Tagg keeps, and I think Liz Johnson both are like, you have to watch the West Wing. I'm like,
Okay.
So Lindsay, good.
On your list. I absolutely love CJ, so that's where that comes from. And Danny Kincannon is great too. Their little banter back and forth. So Danny Kincannon, FYI, CJ is the press secretary of the White House. Danny Kincannon, it works for the press and covers the White House, and hence the forbidden love. Yeah. I mean, that's just a really bad decision right there. And so they kind of have this tension that they never end up together, but they sort of have a couple moments in the first couple seasons, and then he's gone for a while, and then at the very end, he comes back as she is wrapping up her time in the West Wing, now as the
chief of staff.
Thank you. There were words in my head. It was coming. All right. Really quick. Let's just do a quick like
honorable mention round.
Honorable mentions round. And that was obviously my honorable mention. So let's go back to Lindsay really quick. What was your honorable mention?
Okay, The Office, Jim and Pam. I mean,
classic, another classic.
Right? First season, she's engaged to Roy, and he's a not
such a
great
tool
for her. Yeah. Those are the words. And we all know that she should be with Jim because he's amazing and they get along so well. So, yeah, that would be my. And then also Gilmore Girls, Rory and Jess.
Okay, see, I had Max and Lorelai on there too, as well as Rory and Jess, so.
Yes, yeah, Rory and Jess, just because, especially when she's with Dean first and she kind of starts crushing on Jess, that's obviously forbidden. But also, just like, I don't think her mom, like, really, you know, approves of him, and you know, there's all that tension, so.
Jesse was so much better than Dean. I was never a Dean fan. Not that I've watched a lot of it, but in the random episodes I've seen, I was like, damn.
No, I love Dean until season 4.
Oh, season 4, Dean is
Dean after season 4, want to get rid of Dean. But Dean, pre-season four, far better than Jess. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was pretty sweet. Every time I would watch it, though, it was, I think I was married for like a year. And my husband, would he was in law school, I think. And so I would be watching it while he was studying. And so he'd come home and he'd be like, that guy has terrible hair. He hated Dean's hair. So he's always like, I'm like, Dean, he's like, the terrible hair. Yes.
That's awesome. All enough, right. Honorable enough. Mention, Jess. Go for it.
Oh, I've got so many. I want to mention
I do have more,
her.
But I held back.
We all held back. Come on, Jess. You can hold it to just one or maybe two, but just one.
Here's one. And this is unusual because this is a show I have not seen, but I have heard people talk about it. And yesterday it came up in my research for this topic. And it reminded me that this show, I think, has a real cult following. And it's one of those shows that was ended far too early in its time. And the more I looked into it yesterday and like watched the trailer and stuff, I think in isolation, I'm going to have to go back and revisit this show, even though I know it was canceled. And even though I know I'm not going to get the ending I want.
Okay.
Pushing
what's the
Daisies? Has anybody seen Pushing Daisies?
No, I've never seen it.
No, that was with Kristen Chenoweth, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yes. Which I did not realize until I was looking this stuff up yesterday.
So, Lindsay, tell us about your new book.
Yeah, so it's called The Joy of Falling, and it is about two widowed sisters-in-law who run an ultra marathon in New Zealand in memory of their husbands. So it starts when their husbands have been, their husbands died in a freak scuba diving accident. They're brothers. And so it's been 15 months when the book starts. So it's been, you know, and so both women are basically dealing with their grief in different ways, or not dealing with it rather. And so one of the relationships that I love is, so Eva is, was married to Brent, and they, co-owned a string of gyms and yoga studios with Mark, who was Brent's best friend. And he was signed up to run the ultra marathon with, Brent and Wes originally. And so when Eva discovers that the marathon, the people running the marathon didn't know that Brent and Wes had died, and, brought it up, you know, your deposits due, whatever. She's like, what if we could run it in their place? And they say, well, you have to have a team of three still, and we'll only let you two run it in their place or whatever. So Mark still has to run it anyway. So basically, it's not a forbidden love in terms of like people saying like, you shouldn't do this, but it's just like falling in love with your husband's best friend. I mean, your husband's dead, but still, that is kind of like, and also somebody that you basically are a business partner with now, you know, because she's now the co-owner with
That's complicated.
So it kind of complicates it. And also, like, you know, in his mind, he's still grieving his best friend and kind of like feeling like I don't know, like a jerk for like wanting, like falling in love with his best friend's girl. Like, and he, you know, his best friend when he died is like, or like before he died, you know, because he kind of lived this adventurous life where he took a lot of risks and stuff. So he was always like, hey, if anything ever happens to me, make sure you take care of Eva. Well, he's like, that's probably not what he meant. Like, you know, so yeah, so it's kind of a fun, it was kind of a fun relationship to write about. Cause you know, they obviously are training for the marathon together and then they're running the marathon together. And there's just this tension of like falling for each other, but Eva is still very much like, hasn't moved on or, you know, moved forward from her grief and still kind of has this idealistic picture of Brent in her mind, even though he wasn't perfect. She's kind of like idealizing him and their relationship and thinking that like life will never be good again, whatever. So the book is very much about like healing and moving forward and all of that, but also like, so the joy of falling. So it's kind of like the joy of falling in love, the joy of falling, you know, just toward healing. So it has lots of meanings, but that was an interesting relationship to write about. So.
I love those stories about, you know, it's the widow and the widower's, well, the widow's experience. And I'm thinking of like so many books and TV shows right now that I absolutely love those storylines. I don't know if you've ever heard of, I know that I talked recently on the podcast about a theater, musical theater production called Bandstand that was in New York. Oh. It only lasted for like 6 months, and it's Laura Osnes, who's from Minnesota, hence the reason why I love her. Okay. But she played a character like that, where her husband was a war hero, or I guess a war, and he died in war, and then one of his best friends comes back, and they end up falling in love. But it's a lot of that grief, and I loved that storyline, so I'm excited about this one. This sounds exactly up my alley.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a fun relationship to write, for sure.
And tell us about the New Zealand aspect. Have you been to New Zealand? What made you pick that country?
No, I have not. I need to go now that I've researched it thoroughly. Well, one of the first, so when I decided to do an ultra marathon, I was kind of just researching that. And there was actually an ultra marathon that just happened last year. So I kind of used that as a basis for writing when I was writing the book. So I was able to kind of use like where they were running and the terrain and that sort of thing, and just how it was set up. But also, I just loved the metaphor of New Zealand. First of all, they're starting in New York, and when they leave New York, it's winter, and then it's summer in New Zealand. So I love that metaphor, you know, moving from grief to healing, the winter to summer, you know, darkness to light. And then also, New Zealand is such a country of just, it's just such a varied terrain. It's got glaciers, it's got mountains, it's got grasslands, it's got ocean, you know, it's like so many lakes and, you know, just so many different types of terrain, which is grief, right? So it's kind of like the perfect metaphor for grief. And also like all the colors, you know, the blues and the greens and the bright, you know, like just bright colors, which Eva is actually a florist, or she used to be a florist, and now she finds herself unable to work, unable to create. Everything is gray, white, you know, she sees things in colors. And so kind of, again, that metaphor of moving from like the gray of grief toward the like bright color of healing and life again. So
I love all those metaphors too. Those are so good. Seeing this is how writers think, you guys.
I love good metaphors. For sure.
That's awesome. And the scenery in New Zealand, like, what a spot to run an ultra marathon. You'd just be looking around the whole time. It'd slow you down.
Right? I know. And no, I am not a runner either, but I did send an early copy of the book to Kara Isaac, who lives, another author who lives in New Zealand, and she definitely gave me some great feedback. I had a few things wrong, so she helped me correct those. So that was definitely a good call on my part to send that to her, and I'm very grateful to her.
That's awesome. Kara's awesome too.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, when does your book come out? Where can people connect with you and find out more about it and everything online?
April 14th. By the time you're listening to this, it will actually be out.
Yes,
that's true.
Yes, and anywhere books are sold, it's supposed to be in Target stores. I'm not sure for how long. So, and then, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, your indie bookstore, hopefully. Just anywhere books are sold. So, yeah.
Plus, it at the library too, guys. This is a thing that I think people don't understand as much about authors, is that even requesting a particular book at a library helps out a lot. So
totally. And it's ebook, audiobook, and print. So whatever your reading pleasure is, should be available. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And where can people connect with you on social media?
Yeah, so I am on Facebook at Lindsay Harrell Author, lindsayharrell.com. If you want to join my mailing list, I would love to have you. I offer a free short story on there. So that's on right on my website, lindsayharrell.com/subscribe. And I'm also on Instagram on Lindsay Harrell Author. So, yeah.
Yay!
I would love to connect with you.
That's fantastic. And guys, if you would like to connect with us and tell us about who your favorite forbidden love stories are, you can hang out with us more online at Story Nerds Podcast on both Facebook and Instagram. We have our Instagram account up and running now. Woo-hoo! So come continue the conversation there. Tell us what your favorites are. I can't wait to hear what the crowdsourced ideas are. And now, Hannah, while you have been away, I have been dreadfully neglectful in sharing your social media handles, so
well, to be fair, I have been regretfully neglectful of actually updating anything on my social media, really, because I've literally, the first week when all of this hit here in Minnesota, I worked a nearly 80-hour week, and so that's been sort of my life. It has gone down quite a bit from there, so I'm kind of not as busy as I used to be, but so yeah, I haven't been hanging out on social media much just because I'm so focused on work. But when I am on social media, I promise as soon as this settles down, I'll be doing more stuff again. Hannah Davis, author on both Facebook and Instagram, I believe is the thing. So that's mine. And Jess has been hanging out on social media a lot more than me lately. So Jess.
I have. You can find me at Jessica Kate Writing on both Facebook and Instagram, jessicakatewriting.com. I have actually just launched a new podcast as well. If you like story nerds, you might enjoy the McLeod's Daughters podcast, which I am co-hosting with New York Times bestselling author Rachel Houck as we look at the beloved Australian TV drama McLeod's Daughters. So that is an exciting little thing that we can announce.
All right.
We'll see you all next episode. Thanks so much for joining us, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, guys. Loved
it. Absolutely. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.